Hi, empath listeners, and welcome to episode 3 of Spiritually Speaking, a podcast about things that bring meaning and purpose to our lives and help us along our journey to actualizing the best version of ourselves. In spite of hard-won progress from the civil rights movement, legal reforms, and electing our first African-American president of the United States, racial disparities and injustices persist in virtually every aspect of life in America, from housing to healthcare to employment opportunities to income. Perhaps nowhere are these injustices more graphically represented than in the criminal justice system. The most recent example of this injustice occurred on May 25th, when a white police officer named Derek Chauvin put his knee on the neck of a black man named George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, killing him, as Mr. Floyd pleaded that he could not breathe, and other bystanders implored the officer to relent. This entire harrowing event was captured on video by a 17-year-old girl named Darnella Frazier, and has been played and replayed around the world, sparking a global outcry for justice. Events such as this cannot help but impact all of us at home and at work. So today's podcast provides space for us to hear the voices of some of our colleagues as they share their thoughts, their feelings, and their experiences. Hopefully it will serve as a catalyst for more conversation and deeper engagement around issues of diversity and inclusion, and will galvanize our ongoing commitment as an organization to live out our deepest values. Let's listen now to what our colleagues have to say.
Hello, this is Karen Davis Pritchett, Vice President of Access and Inclusion for Empath Health. And I'm really honored to be a part of this podcast to have a discussion and share my thoughts and feelings about the events of George Floyd's killing and the global protests for racial justice, and how it's impacted me personally as well as professionally. It's had a significant impact on me personally and professionally. His killings, like so many others, such as Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Rashard Brooks, just to name a few, shakes me to my core. It has impacted the conversations that I'm having with my family and my friends and colleagues here at Empath Health, as well as my colleagues in other organizations. We're talking openly about racism and how it's part of our everyday experience as an African-American person in our country. It can happen when we're shopping. I'll tell you a quick story. I was shopping for a formal gown and had picked up a dress, and there was not a tag on it. There was an African-American sales clerk. I asked if she could help me, told her that there was not a tag on the dress. She said, sure, I can help you with that. We walked over to the register. Another sales clerk who was not African-American came over and said, what are you doing? The African-American clerk said, I'm assisting her. At that point, the other clerk stood behind her, looking over her shoulder, and me and the other African-American clerk, we just looked at each other because we knew what was going on. Once she found the price of the gown, she told me the price, and I said, okay, thank you. The other clerk said to me, are you not going to get it because you can't afford it? And in that moment, I knew what that remark meant. And I said, I can't afford it, but I don't want it. You can put it back on the rack. And in that moment, it seemed as if we were having a conversation, me and the African-American clerk, because we knew that there was a bias of not being able to afford the dress because of the cost. And that initially she came over because she thought that there was something happening, that we were doing something that was inappropriate. And we knew that because of the way that she looked at us, her body language, and the words that she spoke. So the racism can happen while you're driving, at a parent-teacher conference, when you're at a bank and you're trying to get an approval for a loan. I think there is a free transparency that's happening on both sides of this conversation that George Floyd's death has become the catalyst for. We're telling our truth and sharing our exhaustion, and other people are listening and realizing that there are stark differences in our experiences, that it impacts us every single day. I am committed professionally to creating a culture here at Impact Health and all of our affiliates that's inclusive and cultivating a sense of belonging for all of our staff. If we want to attain our vision to be the leader in life-changing care, you know, all of us wear our badge, and on the back of our badge, we have our vision and our mission printed. If that is what we want to attain, then all of us must authentically care about social injustice, including health disparities and microaggressions and how they show up and our biases that cause us to interact a certain kind of way with each other or informs our behaviors that act out with our patients and our participants and our clients and our community partners and care partners. It's up to all of us. This is not just one group's problem. This is not a Black problem. This is everybody's problem that we need to collectively work together to solve. So what is getting me through this time? I'm listening and being encouraged by people that are becoming allies right before my eyes. An ally is a person that stands with a marginalized group and use their voice and their power to advocate for equity. And that's helping me feel hopeful that we're in this pivotal moment where things really can change and we can have a better country and we can become better people and have stronger, inclusive communities. So hope, like Dr. Heschel said, that there are moments of hope that we've seen throughout this entire ordeal that we're living every single day. I'm also leaning on my faith, listening to music and journaling about my experiences, journaling about my pain, journaling about the hope for the future. So those are the things that's getting me through. And I'm hopeful that all of us will join in whatever way that we can to make sure that not just our country, but also here in Impact Health, that we're living out our values.
Hi, my name's Amy Keith. I'm the grants director here in the foundation at Empath Health. My job is to support EPIC, PACE, community counseling, and hospice, and all of our affiliates to obtain and manage grant-based funding for their programs. Jim has asked me to reflect on the events of George Floyd's killing and the global protest for racial justice, and how they've impacted me personally and professionally. So, for me, the recent events have really highlighted how, as a white person, I have a choice about how much these events affect me. I can choose how much I want to engage or not engage. Racial injustice is ever-present. It is everywhere. And having a choice to ignore it, if I'm tired or if I had a bad day, for me, well, that's really privilege. There is a brilliant woman of color who I follow on Facebook who posts about radical self-care. And I think that's an essential concept for people of color. But for me, as a white, cisgender, heterosexual woman, I feel like radical self-challenging is the order of the day. So I am pushing myself to learn. I'm pushing myself to listen to people of color more, to learn about history and policy, and not to judge people who are fighting systemic oppression for the ways that they choose to fight it. This is all highlighting concepts and ways of viewing our society that are new to me and so much history that I didn't know. So I'm working to challenge my own assumptions and behaviors, and I'm challenging myself to bring discussions about white privilege and racial injustice into white spaces, because white people need to be talking about this. I am also thinking a lot about how the work I do in my job here at Empath Health is impacted by, or how it's impacting, systemic racism. When we design programs and we write grants, we make decisions about who to support and how to support them. We are making decisions about how we are enabling equitable and inclusive access to our services or not. And it's important that we really think about equity in our program design and in our program budgets. You know, it's important that we actualize equity and move it beyond talking points and pretty language. Racism is a social determinant of health, and for many of our patients and clients across Empath Health affiliates, systemic racism is part of their daily reality and lived experience. So I am thinking a lot about how our grant-funded projects and programs can be designed to improve equity and how we can grow grant-funded programs that are anti-racist. I was also asked to reflect on what's giving me hope in these times. And it definitely gives me hope to hear more and more white people say Black Lives Matter, and to see more and more white people acknowledging systemic racism and racial injustice. And I think it's really hopeful to see that books like How to Be an Anti-Racist and The New Jim Crow are selling out in bookstores. And I'm hopeful that this is indicative of a real shift and that it's not just the issue of the moment. I think what gives me the most hope is seeing young people out on the streets day after day calling for and demanding justice. It gives me hope to see young people of color leading and young white people following their lead. It gives me hope to see people of all generations following the lead of young people of color. And these young people aren't only marching, they are pushing for policy change. They are analyzing budgets and funding, public budgets and funding, and they are encouraging people to vote, not just in national elections, but in local elections. In my personal life, I do a lot of volunteer work around voter registration and voter rights, and so for me, it is incredibly inspiring to see this energy among younger generations around voting and even going beyond voting, the energy around civic engagement more broadly.
Hello, everyone. My name is Melissa Rowland, and I am a registered nurse. I am currently a supplemental nurse, but I have a commitment to work with the Lavender team for the past year, almost 2 years, and it's been an amazing experience. A very dear friend of mine, the chaplain here at hospice, called me the other day and said that he was in the process of just trying to gain some understanding of how people are dealing with all that's going on in the world. So many things going on, but all things that are going on that are pretty pressing at this time, knowing that as hospice workers, we are always the conduit of care. We like to administer the care. We like to be the strongholds of care. We like to be the shoulders of care. We like to be the caregivers because that's what we've been called to be. But then there are times where things happen and shift in the atmosphere where the caregivers are now needing care. And it was a very interesting question in wanting to know, how are you as a caregiver doing in a time such as this with the things that are going on right now, especially in our country, specifically with the COVID virus and with the rise of calling out all things that are racist in order to help this country move forward to its next level of existence. And I thought it was a very interesting question. And specifically the question is, and I know it's been said already, but how have the events of George Floyd's killing and the global presence for racial justice impacted me personally and professionally? And that question is more than a question. That question is an understanding of someone's of all of ours existence. And to be able to think of how to put that question, the answer response, into words has been extremely challenging in these last several weeks. My emotions have been extremely high, and it's been a litany of emotions. But the one emotion that I keep settling on that is very unfamiliar to me is anger. And as the days have gone on since this question was posed to me a few days ago, there's been an increase of that anger. And as I expressed to my dear friend Jim, that this is an emotion, the anger and the anxiety, that I am not familiar with existing in. And I am trying very hard as a caregiver to try to understand, how do I deal with this emotion? And the unfortunate part is, as an African-American woman, the word anger has been attached to us for so long that it's also been an embarrassing emotion that we haven't been able to display, because it's been displayed as such a negative type of characteristic of who I am as an African-American woman. So it's very difficult for us to express the anger, because we've always been labeled as angry. So therefore, it's dismissed, and you don't get a chance to really clearly, fully express that. And the anger that I'm feeling is real and is visceral, and it is something that I have to acknowledge if I'm going to be able to move forward in order to help not just this country advance, but my people advance, when it comes to understanding the racial tension and relationships in this country. It has been an elephant in the room for the entire existence of this country, and now it's time for us to actually deal with it. And when I was posed this question in the very beginning, one of the terminologies that I utilize, or one of the relationships that I utilize, is that I feel like I'm unable to really truly express how I really, really feel, because we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we're offending other people. So we have to try to find ways to kind of lighten or kind of soften the blow of what we're actually going through. So therefore, the next person who's in power does not feel like that they're being offended. But in the meantime, we're feeling all these different emotions, but we can't clearly and truly express them, because we don't want to get into the place of offending. And I think what's happening in this country is that we've reached a threshold of that offense, and now we've kind of boiled beyond that, to where people are saying, I understand that I don't want to offend my fellow man, but I need for my fellow man to understand that I am being offended when I sit and watch someone that looks like me being murdered on live TV. As if some kind of way we have to justify that a murder was not justified, because I really am a good person. I'm not a bad person. So having to explain your murder and having to explain and justify that you really were a good person, because it's automatically assumed that you are a bad person. And I'm exhausted from that. I'm tired. I'm tired of having that conversation with my sons. I'm tired of worried about them coming home at night. I'm waiting for these phone calls to come through. And when they don't call, it just breaks my heart. And I do realize that racism is something that can be eradicated. Just people just have to choose that they no longer want to be racist anymore. It's just the choice. I understand that it's systemic and that it's systematic, and it's something that's been passed down from one generation to another. But it still boils down to, God gave us all free will. He gave us all free will to be able to understand and say, listen, I don't understand what an Asian person goes through, but I do understand humanity. I understand that. I don't have to be Asian to understand when an Asian person is in a system that's taking advantage of who they are as Asians. I don't have to be in the LGBT community to understand what they're going through, but I do understand humanity. And I can make a choice whether or not I want to be able to treat that person with kindness, or treat that person with humanity, or treat that person with dignity or respect or not. That's my choice. That's my choice. I have that choice. So we all have choices to make, and racism can literally be eradicated based on everyone saying, I no longer want to treat somebody inhumanely, but I do want to treat people with respect and humanely. And I'm telling you, with that thought process, it can definitely be eradicated, but we're making it more complicated than what it is because we know people benefit from it. Because people remain in a position of power than they do if it were no longer existing. My son called me the other night. He went to a friend's house. When he went there, there was a huge Confederate flag hanging on their property. He said he told his other friend, we have to go. We cannot stay here. Why? Mm-hmm. Why is that? But he automatically said, we can't stay here. We have to go. It was an automatic thought process for him. I do not want to be a member of the Black Moms hashtag Say My Son's Name Club. I don't want to be a member of that. So what gives me hope is that this next generation coming behind us, this world now belongs to them. This is their world now. We've had our chance, and I'm not saying that we still don't have an opportunity to be impactful in this world, but it belongs to my children now. This world now belongs to them. So that's my hope outside of Jesus Christ. My hope is that this next generation will not do what we've done, that we've taught them enough to say, listen, we've inherited this world the way it is, and we really didn't do the best job with getting it to where it needs to be. But hopefully we've done a better job than our forefathers, and now we're asking you guys to do a great job. So, and that's what gets me through, being able to talk to my family, being able to listen to my children, being able to cry it out, to get it out. That kind of helps me to get through.
My sincere gratitude to Karen, Amy, and Melissa for sharing out of your lived experience and your deep feeling. Your honesty and courage and transparency have been profoundly impactful and lead the way for us all to have the kind of courageous conversations about race and racism that will be a catalyst for lasting change in our world. I'm also grateful to Raphael and the senior leadership at Empath Health for the unequivocal statement of support and for providing opportunities such as these to create deeper understanding and inspire us all to continued and sustained action. Thank you for listening.